Good morning. Welcome to Division 1 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We have two cases on our 9 o'clock docket this morning. The first case is Quintana versus Quintana. Parties are here and present and prepared to proceed, I see. Okay, the second case is Alberta Development versus Bugelli. Are the attorneys here for that case? Okay. Now, when you came in today, I believe you were handed some oral argument instructions about our procedures. Does anybody have any questions about those? Okay. Then, if you don't have any questions with that, we can begin with the first case. I'd remind counsel to identify themselves with their name and attorney registration number when they come to the podium. And I'd ask everyone in the courtroom to turn off any pagers or cell phones so as not to disrupt the oral arguments in these cases. With that, we can begin. That's okay, counsel. One time I gave those instructions and I had forgot to do it myself.
So thank you,
it's a little bit embarrassing to be up here fumbling around with my phone.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Charles Powers for the appellant's attorney number 7618. Your Honors, in this particular case, the first on the standard of review, I'll just be very brief on that. In the Lewis case, which I think it defines the standard of review here, the court does say that there's wide discretion in these kinds of cases, except in applying or determining the legal test. And as I said in my brief, I'm not really actually certain what the ambit of defining the test is. But I do believe in this particular case, it is clear that the court below did not feel that she had the authority to fashion the relief, because in this particular case, she found that because there was not an understanding of present ownership, that therefore she had to rule against Frederick, even though she found all the other elements of an appropriate case, that she could not say that because that there is a agreement that he would have title in the future, and because she thought that there was a deviation from Frederick had said, and there was clearly testimony, because she makes reference to it, very substantial testimony from very, very close friends of the family, that they knew that over the years that they had heard both parents say that this property is Frederick's, this I have given this to Frederick, and that Frederick in fact lived on, she says, and used as his own the 400 acres known as the Rivera Ranch for all this period of time.
Excuse me, Mr. Powers, there was no trial transcript of the testimony filed on appeal in this case, is that right?
Yes, that's correct, ma'am.
And
yes.
So what you're asking us to do is review the trial court's findings as to a contract, oral or otherwise, without the benefit of a transcript?
Well, she does find it, Your Honor, and yes, I think that her findings are supposed to be taken as correct, and I do, and the facts are right there. Adequate to determine she applied or felt that she did not have authority to enforce the agreement that existed. Applying the Lewis test, she said that, I assume for the purposes of this appeal that these facts are the facts. The court found the facts, and she had discretion to determine those facts, and she did say right in her facts that Lewis had lived and used on the 400 acres known as the Rivera and used it as his own for this entire time. That's right in the facts, in the order that's before you. Everything that I just said is in the order that's before you. I think when it appears directly on the face of the order that the court entered, that this court should have authority to correct an error of law. In the Lewis case, there's a particularly important reference on page 1142 where the court says, in the circumstance of a failed gift or contract, which is exactly what we have here, and they're talking about a close family relationship, and the court below found that the relationship here was closer, this is also in her facts, or in her conclusion of law, actually, closer than the relationship in Lewis, that there was more confidence, more trust, and a closer relationship.
Mr. Powers, Judge Swifter found that there was, the evidence didn't support a finding that there was any kind of a contract here. And she noted in her findings of fact that there was conflicting evidence. Aren't those correct statements?
I believe that she found, Your Honor, that there wasn't evidence. She did not find that there was a present intent for Frederick to own the property as equitable owner. That was the key element that she determined the entire case on, that it was really an agreement that he would get it on her death, and that she felt that she didn't have authority to enforce that. She said that she even found the agreement in writing. Lucy wrote it, and she quite quotes it in the text of her order. What she turned her ruling on was that she found that even though Frederick thought, and because there were statements that led him to believe that he presently owned it, as in Lewis, the daughter-in-law was saying she presently had a present ownership, that was the understanding. The court here found, no, it was really an understanding that he would get it when she passed away, and that the court felt that she could not enforce that as an agreement, that that was simply, as she says here in her ruling, there was a mutual understanding that Mr. Quintana was making improvements on property that he would someday inherit. Now it appears that Lucy has decided to change the estate plan, and then she is entitled to do this. The court already found there was a mutual understanding that Mr. Frederick Quintana acted on his entire life. She even goes back to in the facts when he was a teenager, encouraging him to work on the ranch for nothing because he would inherit it. She wrote it in the agreement. The court found that, but because in the Lewis case there was a present intent to be an owner, she felt she couldn't enforce this future expectation to be an owner. And in this particular case, Frederick, if you'll notice in the facts, was working either for free or at one time for $100 a week, which is essentially free. She even references that in order to self-support his family, he had jobs elsewhere. So he was benefiting Lucy and Andrew through their lifetime so that they could profit on the land, on the ranch, without any profit of his own, other than living there on the ranch itself.
Mr. Powers, why isn't yes. the court's award of a monetary amount for the unjust enrichment sufficient to basically remedy the situation that you're describing?
Because under Lewis, it first of all, to read the point that I was just about to make, and then the second point right here, it says, in the circumstance of a failed gift or contract between close family members or confidants, the claim arises from the close relationship, the mutual purpose, both of which the court found, and the often ill-defined agreement of the parties. And that's what this was, and that I believe threw the judge off on what to do. But it says here in Lewis, they go on to say, in the event that the parties intended the same outcome, which we had in this case, they wanted to keep the ranch intact and for Frederick to have it, the parties intended the same outcome, or the parties' mutual purpose is easily discernible, the trial court should seek by its equity determination to fulfill this failed mutual purpose.
By an award of unjust enrichment.
Their mutual purpose wasn't to...
In Lewis, did they indicate a remedy could be the imposition of a constructive trust?
Well, I think, yes, that many cases, in that case, the property had been sold. There was, I believe, that it had been sold, and there was no other remedy. It wasn't available, it wasn't possible. But my point is that the court could have, and I believe did not appreciate that she could have, legally said that, as the agreement says, this is not a will, this statement that Lucy wrote out. And the court, it was an expression of the mutual understanding of the parties that he had worked on and given free labor for his lifetime.
Did the court have discretion to choose among remedies, constructive trust or unjust enrichment?
Yes, I believe the court did.
And so it chose, and if it can exercise that discretion, where would be the abuse of discretion?
You would be right if she had said that, yes, I could do that, and I've decided not to. But she said that from reading the ruling, it's clear that the judge did not think she could do that.
Mr. Powers, where in her judgment did Judge Swift say that she did not have the authority to impose a constructive trust?
Well, I don't believe she didn't think she had the authority. I think that she just didn't see it as a possible remedy in this case where there was a future expectation. She said, she said at 18, unlike Lewis, the evidence in this case does not support a finding that Frederick was the owner or equitable owner of the ranch at 18. And at 19, she says the parties seem to want to keep the family's property intact so it could be inherited by the sons after the death of the parents. Lucy and Andrew encouraged Frederick to improve his part of the property because it would be his, but not because it already was his. And then she says, now it appears Lucy has decided to change the estate plan. She is entitled to make these changes. That's a misstatement of the law. The court had the authority to say, no, there was a deal. And she had already said there was a deal and that there was an understanding that he gave quid pro quo for.
Isn't that just the court's interpretation of the evidence, though?
Not inconsistent with the multiple statements she had made throughout the entire order, that there was an understanding, a mutuality of purpose, a family plan that he had followed in his lifetime. And could I just briefly discuss and digress? That's a very interesting issue that I'd like to talk more about, but I wanted to talk about the set-off just briefly. That's not my primary goal here, but on the set-off issue, I believe that's an error of law as well, but let me briefly address that. I've got just under 3 minutes. If you look at it this way, she said that the Salzman case controls, which means when in that case they were working on a house and they were intending to improve that house for living there and free. That was the deal. In this case, the deal was to help mom and dad run a 2,500 acre ranch so mom and dad could profit and son made nothing for his work. He lived there in order to do that. The living on the ranch was a quid pro quo for helping them make money on the ranch. As the judge multiple times said, the whole thing about him improving the property was just because he thought he was going to live there someday, had nothing to do with their other deal. If you look at the remedy she gave, he improved the ranch and all the rent was taken right out of that. So what was all that lifetime of work for free for? Zero. The lifetime of work, he was living there so he could do the work. And when he wasn't living there, he was still working.
Was he given the opportunity to provide a value for his work over all those years?
Certainly at trial he could have proved that, yes, Your Honor, but just if a deal is to trade a pig for a wagon, it doesn't matter what the pig's worth and it doesn't matter what the wagon's worth. The parties thought they were worth the same thing. And in this case, living on the ranch was the equivalent of him being near mom and dad with grandkids and working on the ranch to help them run it. That was the deal. The incidental improvement is a complete windfall or unjust enrichment to grandma, mom. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Council. You have just under a minute left for rebuttal. Go ahead.
Good morning. Paul Grant, number 26517, for the appellee, Lucy Quintana. First, I want to touch on the standard of review, because I'm not sure if that's a clear issue at this point or not. I think under the Lewis case, it is very clear that we're talking about an abuse of discretion standard. What the Lewis court said is the only issue in an equitable claim that might be subject to de novo review is the standard applied by the court. In this case, that is not an issue for review.
I thought the position of your opponent is that the trial court misapprehended her authority, never understood that she had the option of imposing a constructive trust.
And that may be their position, and that would be subject to an abuse of discretion standard. So let me go straight to that question. The court did not misunderstand her authority. In fact, on page 17 and 18 of her opinion, she says that the appropriate remedy is not a constructive trust. The appropriate remedy is restitution. So she considers the fact that a constructive trust might be a remedy. She denies that as a remedy. Why does she deny it? Because in this case, unlike the Lewis case, there was no indicia of ownership of the property, either legal or equitable. The Lewis case, there was a laundry list of reasons why the court found that there was ownership from the daughter-in-law. That they paid the mortgage payments, they paid the insurance, they paid the property taxes, they did all the repairs, they maintained the property. Here, there was none of that. What we had here is we had the plaintiff, appellant, making improvements to the property. That's it. They didn't make any payments. They didn't pay the property taxes. They didn't pay the insurance. They didn't even pay for the utilities. No evidence of that. They didn't pay for anything having to do with that property. Moreover, Frederick Quintana admitted in his divorce proceeding that he didn't own the property. So that actually makes it a lot more like the Salzman versus Bachrach case, which the court also alludes to. And that's how she came up with the remedy. Lewis, they applied, they provided the daughter-in-law with ownership and gave her the benefit of that because it was clear that that was the intent of the parties, that the son and the daughter-in-law were supposed to own the property. At the very least, they had an option, which they were never allowed to exercise. Salzman versus Bachrach is much more like this case. In Salzman, Mr. Bachrach, actually, he denied that he owned the property, and he conveyed his ownership interest to the plaintiff. In a letter to her former husband, I believe, he said, "I don't own the property. I'm just living there rent-free." And that's what we really have here, and I think that's why Judge Swift applied the remedy that she did, is because this is a case where we don't have any indicia of ownership, and we have Mr. Quintana denying that he owns the property for his own benefit in a divorce proceeding. Now he wants to go back and say, I was just kidding. I really did own the property. I thought I owned it. But the court found, no, you didn't. You never owned it. There was never an agreement on that. The only understanding was that you might get it when we die. And I would say that the court heard days of evidence, reviewed reams of documents, and I think one of the big struggles in this case was that the plaintiff's claim was a moving target. If you look at the initial claim, it was, I own half the ranch. We have a contract and I own half the ranch. The court said, no, there is no contract. You don't own half the ranch. Next, the plaintiff says, well, under an equitable theory, I at least own this portion of the ranch called the Rivera Ranch. It's about 400 acres out of the 2,500 acres. And the court said, no, you never owned that either. And in fact, you admitted you didn't. So there's no ownership there. And the remedy for that was a constructive trust in that property. Well, now the claim, which was not a claim that was heard at trial, is there should be a constructive trust on the Rivera Ranch after my client, Lucy Quintana, dies. That wasn't even a claim of trial. That was, the claim was, I own half the ranch, but if I don't own half the ranch, I at least own the Rivera Ranch. Now they're saying, okay, we admit we don't own it. We never owned it. There's no agreement that we owned it, but we should get it after everyone dies. That wasn't even a claim that was heard at trial. And that's the struggle, I think, that Judge Swift had, is you've said there's an agreement, but you can't even tell me what the agreement was. It keeps changing. You keep changing your position. Based on that, I think she came up with the appropriate remedy. And Judge Swift wrote a very, I think, comprehensive opinion, made a lot of findings of fact, and I think she correctly applied the law to the facts. Because what she found is...
Mr. Grant, let me ask you about that. Mr. Powers mentioned several times in his brief the sentence in Judge Swift's opinion where she said there was a mutual understanding that Mr. Quintana was making improvements on property that he would someday inherit. So where does the rent figure into that sentence?
I think the rent, in fashioning a remedy, I think what Judge Swift tried to do is make sure no one obtained a windfall. So if she had given Frederick Quintana the entire value of the improvements he made to the property based on her findings, which is about $73,000, then he would have received that, but he would have also received an 18-year period of free rent. And I think what she really was trying to do is take all the facts and fashion the best, most fair remedy that she could possibly fashion.
Counsel, is there any dispute that for that 18 years, Lucy Quintana asked Frederick Quintana to live on the ranch and that he performed work, although unvalued at this point? There was a mutuality of purpose in that he would live there without paying any rent?
There's no dispute that there was never a demand for rent. There's a lot of facts going both ways about what exactly the arrangement was. I think the plaintiff maintains that we were there to work and keep our grandchildren close to you, and that's what we gave you in exchange for the rent.
So I guess my question is, how can it be characterized as a windfall if Lucy Quintana gets the improved properties without paying rent, which was apparently their understanding would happen, and Frederick gets the value of the improvements that he made with the plot that he would get the property?
Because that, if you don't consider the rent, it disregards everything else that the Quintanas, and that's Lucy and her deceased husband, provided to Frederick. And there's a lot of evidence on that. There was evidence that they provided their necessities to him. Obviously, they paid their utilities. They paid all the expenses associated with the home other than the improvements. They bought him trucks, farm equipment. They gave him money. And I think the judge's problem there was no evidence regarding the value of what Frederick did. So she couldn't use that as an offset because there was no evidence on that issue. And so I think she took what evidence there was, and again, I think she fashioned the best remedy that she could, the most fair remedy that she could.
Did Frederick have outside employment during those 18 years?
He did. At times. Yes. And I believe that is a finding that the judge makes.
What did he do?
I know he worked at a dairy for part of the time. He also hauled hay for others other than the Quintana Ranch. There is one more job that I don't know, but she does list those in her opinion. So he did have outside employment at times during that 18-year time frame.
Yeah, let me ask you again about the set-off. In the court's order, which, as you said, was quite detailed, it's fairly clear that the court was applying the Lewis mutuality of purpose when it looked at the ownership issue. But is there anything in the order that shows that the court applied the mutuality of purpose when it determined the amount, or was it required to do that or not?
I don't think she was required to. Well, I think the mutuality of purpose, that was the test to determine whether unjust enrichment applied.
So you're saying it doesn't go to the amount as well?
My reading is it doesn't go to the remedy in fashioning the remedy.
And why is that?
Why doesn't the mutuality of purpose test go to fashioning the remedy?
Yes.
My understanding of that, the mutuality of purpose test, is that that determines whether unjust enrichment applies. So your question is, well, if the purpose was you live here, we give you free rent, should it be applied in that case? I think that she found that that wasn't necessarily the deal. I know plaintiff wants to say that that was the deal, but that's not what she found. She found that she wasn't sure what the deal was because the plaintiff could never really articulate what exactly the agreement was.
Well, more specifically, she found she didn't have any evidence to value the work over the 18 years.
She did find that. And she found a lot, I think she found a lot of value conferred going both ways. She had the plaintiff providing labor. There's no question about that. The plaintiff improved the property. No question about that. On the other hand, she found that the Quintanas provided maintenance for their son and their daughter and their daughter-in-law and their family. They provided equipment to him free of charge. Of course, they paid for everything associated with the property other than the improvements. They paid him for his labor every once in a while. And there was definite factual dispute about how much labor he provided. And so that's why it was difficult for her to quantify that. In a sense, I think she maybe did apply the mutuality of purpose test, but I think the conclusion was, I'm not sure what the deal was. How can I figure out what the purpose was? And she did the best she could.
Is there anything in the order that supports that she applied the mutuality of purpose test to the restitution amount?
Your Honor, without flipping through here, I probably can't cite you to anything specific, but I think when she starts dealing with the numbers is when you can sense her struggle in figuring out what to do with all the numbers and how to come up with the best remedy. And that starts on page 19. But I think the biggest problem was that there was never an articulation by the plaintiff of what exactly the deal was. And so the court really had to come up with that on her own. She had to come up with what the deal was. We're talking about a 25-year time period, and a lot of things happened during that 25 years, and the court, I think, again, did the best she could based on the facts of coming up with what the deal was and coming up with the appropriate remedy based on what the deal was.
Mr. Grant, did Lucy argue that the value of the rent should be deducted from the value of the improvements in the district court?
Your Honor, we did argue that, yes. I will quickly wrap it up. All I really wanted to say is that I think this judge knew exactly what she was doing. And if you read her order, and I've read it 15 times, she knew what remedies were available to her. And given the fact that she found no equitable ownership or legal ownership of the property, she fashioned the best remedy that she could come up with. That was restitution. To fashion that remedy, she took a lot of evidence, a lot of facts about numbers and value conferred both ways, and I think she did the best she could. Under the appropriate standard of use of discretion, I think it would be difficult to tell her that she somehow abused that discretion. I think she did the best she could based on all the facts, all the evidence, and all the documents in front of her. Thank you for your time.
Just briefly, on the support thing, the arguments counsel just made about them paying all the support and the utilities, that's not in the order. The order makes reference to the fact that they didn't pay. There wasn't any evidence that they paid the insurance or the taxes. There isn't any statement about supporting or paying their utilities. There's nothing about that. That's not a finding of the court. And the statement of the court at 19, Lucy and Andrew encouraged Frederick to improve his part of the property because someday it would be his, not because it was already his. That's a statement of the court's thinking, that it was essential that it must be his now for her to rule for him on the constructive trust, and just did not consider the idea that she could enforce the agreement, which is written in Lucy's handwriting and signed, that someday, it's right in there, that it will be his after she dies. And that's the agreement that I that she didn't consider and could have done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. An opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.